Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We are about to have a conversation about Gil Scott Heron, who is, for those of us of a certain age, remember him well, and many people younger remember him well, the power that he had in his words, the power of who he was as a human being, what he gave America and culture, what he gave to music. He passed away, but wrote an autobiography called The Last Holiday, a memoir. We are going to have a conversation about him, the book, what his life and work meant. We are joined by my good friend Ethelbert Miller, award-winning author and poet. His most recent book is The Fifth Inning. By the way, you can meet Ethelbert this Thursday night at Busboys and Poets in D.C. He'll be interviewing Katrina Vanderhoevel from The Nation magazine on her new book and joins us here by phone. Ethelbert, good to have you with us, man. We can pot Ethelbert up there so I can he can be heard and we can hear him.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Gotcha, man. Good. Thank you for being here, Ethelbert.
Thank you.
Dr. Lester Spence, author of Stare in the Darkness, The Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics, who is assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. Good to have you here.
Good to be here, as always.
A little bit of Detroit in the house, can't hurt.
Somebody's got to do it, baby.
Darius Wilmore is with us, author and graphic designer and music genius. Darius, good to have you in the house. Thank you for coming.
Sure, my pleasure. Happy to be here.
So we've got our music queued up here. Let me play this first cut, because I want to jump right to Ethelbert after we play a little teeny piece of a little bit
you will
of,
not be able.
A little bit of what we all remember of Gil Scott, what he stands out for in most media minds, but Ethelbert has a different take, and then we'll jump off with that. But let's hear what we're talking about right here.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Mendel Rivers to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised.
Now, that was Gil Scott, as people like to think of Gil Scott. Whatever you think of, that's what pops in your head. But I love the piece, Ethelbert, that you wrote about Gil Scott Heron, because it was just remembering a different human being in ways that people don't want to or just don't.
Now, I couldn't hear what you played. I assume you played The Revolution Will Not Be Televised.
We did. You didn't hear that?
Yeah, I couldn't hear it.
Okay, sorry.
I guess it won't be on the revolution will not be on the radio either. but what I was commenting on, Mark, and I wrote a piece on this, is I was always concerned about writers passing away. You pick up the obituary and they're reduced down to one poem. And I saw this happening with Gwendolyn Brooks, where the great Gwendolyn Brooks was reduced down to We Real Cool. And I didn't want that to happen to Gil Scott Heron. And I went back and I looked at the fact that when I look at the 1970s, so many of his songs, define that decade for me. Many of his pop songs were written during that time. And I felt that Gil wrote a number of beautiful, sensitive compositions around black masculinity, around black fathers, black men. And I felt that that was a very important part of his work that needed to be emphasized. The same way we need to emphasize the fact that he was multi-talented. He wrote fiction, poetry, and as you may reference in the introduction, he also wrote a memoir.
So now, the memoir was amazing. I mean, what he traversed in that memoir. I just was struck by little things in that book, like about the story of his growing up in Tennessee. And integrating his junior high school, but not being forced to integrate it. His mother didn't make him do it. She gave him the choice, and he did it. And then running off to finish high school in New York, and then going, he's just his whole, what he went through. He was just, there's so many pieces of him that we don't see. Let me go to my other guests here. I just want to get a sense from both of the other men in this conversation about what Gil Scott Heron represents to them and to this world now. We're going to play another piece the piece we're going to play from here on in, except for one piece, are things that came out of Ethelbert's article, because they just really struck me as I listened to them. And a piece that always struck me very deeply, which was a piece he did in 1994 to Fannie Lou Hamer. That was a very powerful piece that he sang and wrote that meant a lot to me. But Darius.
I Gil Scott was before my time, so everything that I view him through hip hop, you know, and what happened once hip hoppers got their hands on some samplers, you know, 86, 85. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, and, you know, James Brown was the first guy that people went wild over. He started sampling his records. But James didn't seem to make it into the 1990s in terms of beat production. But I think Rihanna just did a song with Drake, and they're, you know, using Gil Scott's chorus as the hook for one of their songs. I think Take Care. So Gil seemed to have made it over 40 years in terms of his musical influence, you know. And to me, that's pretty powerful, being that James is the godfather of rap and funk, you know. So it says something that they're still sampling him still to this day.
Lester.
What struck me up? So his memoir is The Last Holiday. Right. And I got a chance to read this. Even though Andarius and I are around the same age, for some reason, I still think of Gil Scott. You know, I wasn't introduced to him through hip-hop. Now, I couldn't tell you how I was introduced to him, but it was like he was kind of always there. Most likely it was my dad playing him, you know, in the home. And what struck me reading that memoir was how he lived a life. Right. And his life was kind of a testimony to how complex African-Americans can be, because so if you think about his family growing up, technically he grew up in what we call now a broken home. Right. His dad was
Jamaican-Canadian guy,
was a Jamaican-Canadian soccer player, like one of the best. And he went overseas to actually play soccer. So he grew up basically with his mom, and then for a while he grew up with his grandmother. We call that a broken home now. But if you actually read the memoir, what you see is black excellence throughout, right? Mm-hmm. His life is kind of a testimony that you can have really, really rich content to it without having kind of a prescribed form, right? And he lived a full life, but even saying that, he was gone too soon.
And it's that complexity, Ethelbert, that you pick up on in your piece and in your work.
Well, the complexity, I think, is something in which, even when you have memoirs, I've written two, you don't tell the truth in these memoirs. And so I think you still have to look at a person who has secrets. I even look at the fact that Gil Scott had an album called Secrets. I felt it very interesting that looking back on Winter in America and also the Secret album, he records Your Daddy Loves You twice. Okay? Gil was very close to his children. So many times when you come out of those homes that, you know, you can redefine as being broken or not being broken, many times people try to correct that in their own lives, and perhaps the failure of that is where you see people succumbing to drug, substance abuse and things of that sort. I think what happens is that, you know, we have another artist here that we need to analyze so that future artists don't die too soon.
So let me play this little cut real fast, so then we'll take a break. So I want people to get a feel for just what Ethel was talking about. And this is cut number 3, all from across the glass. Your Daddy Loves You. Let's pick up on that, then we'll go to break.
Now, sweet little old brown-eyed girl, hey, now that you're sleeping, I've got a confession to make. All secrets that I've been keeping. Me and your mama had some problems, a whole lot of things on our minds. But lately, girl, we've been thinking that we were wasting time nearly all the time. Your daddy loves you.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I'm here with Ethelbert Miller, award-winning author, poet, and his most recent book is The Fifth Inning. He'll be this Thursday night at Busboys and Poets, interviewing Katrina Vanderhoevel about her new book. Great location. Ethelbert's one of the most brilliant minds in our world, as are some of my other guests as well. Dr. Lester Spence is in the house, assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, author of Stay in the Darkness, The Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics. Darius Wilmore, author and graphic designer. 410-319-8888 is the number here. That last piece we played, and I just, your daddy loves you, given all the stuff that Gil Scott-Heron went through with his family. And I think that it was amazing to me. I really enjoyed, Ethelbert, the pieces you chose in your essay to pull out, and that was one of them.
Well, yeah, and I pulled that out because, you know, one thing that you have to do, you have to root, and maybe your guests will also agree with this, you have to root Gil Scott-Heron in the blues. You know, that's I think it's his foundation. I mean, even if you listen to his introduction to H2O on Gate Blues, the Watergate Blues, you know, that introduction, that's the essence of blackness. And when you look at many times when individuals are wrestling with certain demons and stuff, you look at how they sing the blues. You listen to that voice, that hurt that's there at some time. And when I look at this last place that you played, Your Daddy Loves You. You know, you think about a father that walked into a room, his child is sleeping, and you know, he knows he has to leave this household. You know, it's not working out with his woman. You know, and he wants to be there and said, you know, I want to tell you, I love you. There's a lot of things I can't tell you right now while you're sleeping, but I got this confession made. I've been keeping things from you. I mean, that's a very powerful, you know, in a few lines, a whole relationship is defined there. And you don't know how much hurt and pain just to come into that room and look at your child and say, okay, I've been keeping some secrets from you.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think he writes the book for them, right? The memoir. I think he notes that he really wants the kids to understand. And Ethelbert is right. I mean, anytime you write a memoir, it's you. So you can't necessarily, as a reader, you can't necessarily take everything as truth. But I think it's telling that he, on some level, he wrote the book for the kids. But on the blues, in the beginning of H2O Gate, he does. He talks about basically the 500 shades of the blues, of the blues. And he goes through some of them and talks about, you know, there's the ain't got no money blues. There's the, you know, I need a woman blues. And sometimes there's the ain't got no money and I need a woman blues. And it's like whoa, yeah. Yeah, that's the blues,
yeah,
right?
There's
a lot of blues.
I think that was sampled on Boogie Down Productions. Why is that? I think H2O was. And I always wondered for years what that was. You know, back in the day, they didn't have the internet, and they didn't have Mad Cats chronicling samples that people did. But you'd wonder where that voice come from. You know, who said that? Who said what? Who did that snatch? So I think that was him on Why Is That? If I'm not mistaken.
So when you think of, if the three of you could pick out what Gil Scott-Heron meant for, what he represents in today's world, how he is still relevant, what he's the root of for a generation that may not even know who he is. You know? Go ahead, Ethelbert.
Well, I think he's visionary. You know, you could go back and you could deal with the, you know, winter in America, in which he uses winter as a metaphor, and he also talks about how this is a term used to describe the season of ice. And then at the same time, he's reminding us that spring is just around the corner. This is 1973. Now we just got to the Arab Spring, you know, like last year. But he's talking about spring is right around the corner, and he's talking about a spring of brotherhood and united spirits among people of color. Okay. Then when you look at everything from 3 Mile Down, I mean, Johannesburg, Gil is global the way Du Bois was global, okay? He's global in terms of the way Malcolm X is making a connection between the Congo and Mississippi. He's making a connection between South Africa and South Carolina, okay? A lot of people don't do that, okay? Many artists don't do that. I met Gil a number of times, and I put Gil alongside, at least in terms of people I've met, alongside Bernice Reagan. And these are individuals in terms of they can take something that's happening, that's topical, and immediately turn it into to a composition of that's so creative that you say, wow, how did they do that? I mean, look at one little line that's in the H2 Watergate Blues. If Nixon knew Agnew, you know, the wordplay on that is genius, man. You know, yeah. We had to do our homework tonight. We'd be up all night trying to figure out how we could do something like that. If Nixon knew Agnew. I mean, that's just pure genius, man.
Yeah.
Oh, there
yeah,
is.
Yeah, sure. I was in the car earlier today with a young brother. I think he's 22. And, you know, I was talking about Gil, and I was going to be coming over here. And I said, you ever heard of him? He said, nah, I never heard of him. I said, so I got on my phone and started playing songs. And, you know, blew his mind. He had no idea. Common, Kanye, you know, The People by Common, that Kanye sampled of a Gil Scott song for. And I was telling him, I said, you know, you heard about Langston Hughes, right? He's like, yeah, yeah. I said, you know, it's like reading Langston Hughes for the first time, but, you know, to a beat, you know, you're done, you know? You're a changed person at that moment. You're a whole new person, you know? Change you. So, and this is a young guy, so so who knows what he'll do after I talk to him about that. But if he goes and investigates it, you know, it'll have an impact on him like it's like he's been having for the past 40 years for people, you know? Langston to a beat is kind of how I...
Langston to a beat, is that what you said?
Yeah, to me, mm-hmm. But...
You know, we you hear people talk often about like the sound of a generation, right? Mm-hmm. When I think of the 70s, of that whole period, the political aspects, the cultural aspects, there are a few voices I think about. I think about Stevie Wonder, you know, mm-hmm. as far as the group level, I think about somebody like the Commodores or Earth, Wind & Fire. But then I think about Gil Scott-Heron, right? And so it's deeply rooted in the 70s, but it really transcends that, right? And it's not just about, you know, hip-hop folks using him. I mean, so, you know, I wrote about hip-hop. I'm really a house music guy. But house music DJs pull from that bottle, I mean, it's like time. You listen to that, and it's absolutely timeless, even though when you hear it, you think about the 70s.
But right. But there's something in the sound that even though it's in the 70s, it's still contemporary.
Yeah,
I don't know if you the other guests can, you know, can talk on that. I don't know what that is, but there's something in that spans decades,
well,
man.
Well,
that's crazy.
Can I mention something there? Please. When you talk about that sound, okay, and we're talking about Gil, and I think that's important, but you've got to bring in Brian Jackson. You got to bring in Bilal Sunni Ali, you know, because these are people who are, you know, he's taking those words, fusing it with his music. The Midnight Band was tight.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then also, I mean, if you take the first minute of A New Day, you take from South Africa to South Carolina, then you got to focus on Iceman, who is the graphic designer who's doing the artwork.
Oh, wow.
You might not be able to download that today, but if you don't have any money and you can just stand in the record store and look at the album, that's enough right there. You know what I'm saying? You take those images of the gorilla with the machine gun, you know, and you're ready to go out.
Yeah.
And the song might follow, but you ain't got the money for the music. You got enough for the image.
Yeah.
You see? But Brian Jackson, I think, really, you know, supports Gil. I mean, last time I saw Gil, the person who was holding him up at the Blues Alley was Kim Jordan on piano. You see? So the people that he had around him, musicians, were talented and skillful. I mean, you listen to Kim Jordan. I mean, Kim Jordan can play. You know, Kim Jordan can play.
Yes,
and I felt that what Gil was successful to do is to fuse the spoken word with the music, you know, like without a scene being seen there.
I was.
We're gonna come back. We're gonna take a brief break to come back to our guest to talk about Gil Scott-Heron and his wonderful new autobiography. Not his autobiography that came out after he passed away. The last holiday, a memoir. And we're gonna talk about how you can get that book in your home, in your library, and support your public radio station WEAA at 410-319-8888. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We are talking about Gil Scott-Heron and his wonderful book that was published after he passed away called The Last Holiday, a memoir. We are joined by Ethelbert Miller, award-winning author and poet. His most recent book is The Fifth Inning. This Thursday night, he will be at Busboys and Poets in Washington, D.C. at 14th and V, I think that location. Is that right? Yeah. Ethelbert is chair of the board of the Institute for Policy Studies, and he'll be interviewing Katrina Vandenhoof about her book, The Change I Believe In. We're also here with Dr. Lester Spence, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Johns Hopkins University, author of the book Stare in the Darkness, The Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics, and Darius Wilmore, author and graphic designer. Let's go to this cut. We're going to play from Storm Music, and then we'll pick up on why Ethelbert put this in his essay.
Justice is coming on the winds of the storm. We resist in the presence for those yet unborn. A freedom is spreading its wing like a bird. And the message it carries has got to be heard. Oh, what's that music? Playing on the radio. What's that music?
Ethelbert, again, talk to us about why that was in your essay.
Well, you know, you have a line in there, justice is coming on the winds of the storm, we resist in the present for those yet unborn. What I find, you know, in a lot of Gill's compositions, is a lot of reference to the season, okay? And then also a lot of reference to it's a new day, it's going to be a new day, you know? I mean, you would find some of that, for example, Sonia Sanchez has a short book, a small book, I think, for children called It's a New Day, you know, young poems. What I find interesting, going back to the 70s, that sense of storm, new day, sort of transition, a lot of that comes in from perhaps Islamic influence in the Black nationalist movement. You know, for example, if you go back and look at Peace Go With You, Brother, the subtitle of that is Assalamu Alaikum. You know, a lot of people are looking at, you know, there's this conflict, this storm, and then this whole new sort of era coming in. And a lot of that had a lot to do, what I felt, with the Islamic influence coming in. I saw that in Haki Madhubuti's work. You know, we get this battle, you know, between Christianity and all of a sudden Islam comes in there and moves people into a new day. The same way the Nation of Islam will take you from prison, clean you up, shine your shoes, give you a bean pie, and put you on a road for redemption. You know what I'm saying? You know, something like Gil Scott Heron's music, you know, sort of flows into that and looks at the future, looks at young people, you know, looks at the new day. But we have to have that storm. We have to have that winter before we get there.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that, because what also is happening during that time is you see the political takeover, really, of a number of cities that it turned demographically. So you're talking about Detroit electing its first Black mayor, Atlanta electing its first Black mayor. I think Cleveland by that time already had Newark as well. And then I believe D.C. also. Right. So it's not just there's this cultural component, but then there's also this political component where you have individuals for the first time actually taking political control, and there was this sense that anything was possible, right?
Yeah, and I think I'm glad you said that, because then you could add on the connection to, you know, African Liberation Day taking place in there and people struggling against apartheid. So
yeah.
the new day is also like freeing Nelson Mandela and getting rid of apartheid, and we get a new era coming in.
And it's, you know, again, going back to the book, and I know, Lester, you read the book. Ethelbert?
Yeah, I read excerpts of the book. I tell you what I did. I went straight to him writing about D.C. because because what happened, I felt that, you know, especially after Gil died, everybody was claiming him, though. And I said, well, Gil, you know, D.C., let's claim Gil, you know. You know, because, you know, he had an impact at Federal City College. You
right,
know? And you
right,
think
right.
Of,
oh, yeah.
And see, you think of Gil Scott Heron, C.L.R. James, Leon DeMoss, breathing the same classroom air.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, everybody who left Howard University because they couldn't teach, you know, what they wanted to teach, it was the FCC.
Yeah.
You know, FCC was a new arc, you know.
I didn't know he spent time at Hopkins. He got his master's.
Yes,
at
so I was getting ready to say.
We can
claim him too, right?
Yeah,
the writing program.
And he recorded Winter in America in Silver Spring, Maryland.
He did.
You claiming him now?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Well, in the last show we did about Gil Scott, someone called up the show, who was actually who lived downstairs from Gil Scott when he was at Hopkins here in Baltimore, and talked about how they hung out, what he learned from him, and the relationship they had when he was a graduate student, and the creative writing seminars at Hopkins.
Wow.
Now, somehow he was able to go to graduate school at Hopkins without getting a degree from the other school he went to, undergrad. So I don't know how that happened.
Who knows how these things happen? Yeah. But he was
he's that
like,
dope that he can just.
Well, no, well, I mean, he writes about it, right? I mean, so again, right. if his story is accurate, he happens to be in the office, right? The deadline's right. March 1st. But they had gotten so many applications that year that they had already, even though it was March 1st, they had already made their decisions. So Gill is trying to get in to see the head guy. I think it's Bob Elliott, right? And the head guy comes in just as a secretary is trying to kind of usher him out. And Gill just talks to Bob. He's like, listen, man, I've got – he gives him two books and an LP. And he was like, listen, I will take the, you know, if I can't get down, I will take that. But at least take a look at this. And if there's somebody in there that's got more than this body of work, you know, cut me. I'm good mm-hmm. with that. So he makes a call while Gill is there. He's like, listen, I need money for one more slot. Mm-hmm. Right. That, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, you think about the audacity required to make that move. Right. I mean, it's just absolutely powerful.
And this is the man who also fell when he got into coke, which he doesn't talk about much in the book.
No, not at all.
Doesn't deal with it. It becomes like something where he passed through. It was just something as a subtext to
you
everything.
You don't want to do that in your memoir, see, because you put that in there. we never talk about anything, and it becomes like a drug memoir, you know?
Oh,
you
yeah,
know,
fair enough.
I mean, you go to that, you know, like you marry one of those, what are those sisters running around from, you know, the Kardashians? You marry one of them. You marry Cheryl Pell, and the book becomes out Cheryl Pell.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So your editor, leave that out, or just tip around that, so it doesn't become, you know, a drug book.
You do have a way of making things very clear, Ethelbert. Well, one of the I want to play a little cut here. That's not from one of the things you picked out, but this is the Fannie Lou Hamer cut. If we can get ready to cue that up, guys, across the glass. Fannie Lou Hamer, and I, because it's a very brief one, but it says to me something about how he viewed the struggle, how he viewed the black struggle, how he viewed the history and what it meant and the people in it. And I just want to, let's play this cut real fast.
There's no one I can think of, I'm trapped in this season, all over the place,
wasn't quite a clear cut as I was hoping, but it's something he did in 1994, and he went through this entire rap before he did the song, which I couldn't play the whole thing of because it was 8 minutes long, before he went into the song, which had to do with sharing, which had to do with fighting people who got theirs but stood up because they fought for those that didn't and kept on fighting, and what Fannie Lou Hamer's life meant for the black world, for black folks from freedom, but for the whole world and for America. I mean, this is Gil Scott Heron was. I mean, when you read his book, you can feel it and see it all the way through. I mean, he was a deep, deep intellectual.
Yeah, but you know what you could add there, Mark?
What's that?
You could add voice to voice. You could say, okay, yes. This is Fannie Lou Hamer as a freedom singer, connecting with Gil Scott Heron. So you know, not her political activity, just her songs. You know, she's a freedom singer. It's just like Bernice Reagan, you know. I mean, that's where, you know, you have to look at. Fannie Lou Hamer was a singer. If you pick out like the songs of the Civil Rights Movement, she's on there as a singer.
Oh wow!
You see? And so right. We think of Fannie Lou Hamer just as a political organizer in '64. You know, no, Fannie Lou Hamer is a singer also.
Right.
She's a freedom singer. And so when you make this connection between her and Gil Scott Heron, there's a musical lineage. There's a musical DNA there,
right?
That you want to look up. Same way, like Barack used to talk about, you know, you look back at the Civil Rights Movement, and there's two streams. For every Bob Moses, there's somebody who winds up in the Black Caucus. coming at it. Wow. For somebody who's still doing like Charlie Cobbler, there's somebody, a mayor of Atlanta, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There's two streams, you know, coming at it. But when you look at this stream in terms of from Fannie Lou Hamer to Gil Scott-Heron, then you bring it up and say, okay, where do we go past Gil Scott-Heron? Okay, work with me here, you know? See, you know, where we go with Gil Scott-Heron, where somebody has the quality work, work is global, visionary, you see what I'm saying? Where's the continuity?
Yeah.
Look at our artists. I know a lot of people getting paid, they're successful, but is their work visionary?
That is something to take us to break for people to think about Gil Scott-Heron, and we'll come right back and talk more about him, this incredible book. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner here with Dr. Lester Spence, author of Staring the Darkness, The Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics, assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, award-winning author and poet Ethelbert Miller. His most recent book is The Fifth Inning. And Darius Wilmore, author and and graphic artist, been in the music industry a long time. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're talking about Gil Scott-Heron. We're talking about the book that was published, his autobiography, The Last Holiday, a memoir that came out after he passed away. 410-319-8888 is the number. Let's queue up, get ready to queue up number two. We'll play that in a minute as soon as we, because we want to get to what You Could Be My Brother and what that says to us all. And I was just thinking about what Ethelbert was saying at the very end, Darius. You look like you were about to say something when we went to break, but didn't get a shot.
Oh, sure. Lester hit upon something that struck me, and he mentioned the word audacity, that it was audacious for Gil to step to who he did with his material. And it seems like, and I would love for the gentlemen to talk about this, if they can, to give us their thoughts on it. You know, that could be the story of all of African America, right? Audacity. You know, the audacity to try to survive when it seems like there's no hope, you know? I was watching TV, and the rapper Ice-T was on there. And this is beyond rap, obviously, but he was saying that, you know, when he was on The View, and they asked him how he got to where he got to. And he said, you know, whenever somebody presented me with an opportunity, you know, I knocked the door down, and I wasn't going to let any door be closed. And then Ice Cube has said similar things. So it's similar to what, you know, what Gil did when he was trying to get his foot in the door there. And it seems like that could be carried out through all of African America. There's a history of audacity, you know. So if you guys have any thoughts on that, I'd love to.
Ethelbert, you want to jump on that first?
Well, I knew he had when I first met him, he was, I think, Piece of Man, which came out, and he was furious at, I think it was the Flying Dutchman label, what you call a Flying Dutch tap, you know. What happened, he was really concerned about, you know, what was happening to his control of his music.
Right.
You know, and many times when you knock down the doors, you know, you want to also have control over your art form. And that I think is very important for, you know, future artists to learn from.
Yeah, there are a number of artists who are political as far as their art, but they're not necessarily political as far as, you know, black life. You know, and then vice versa. But what we have with Gil Scott is somebody who is kind of deeply conscious about both projects, and even saying both is really oversimplifying it, right? So there are a number of cases where he's presented with something nobody had ever done before, and there was nothing in his life that would have necessarily we could use to kind of predict him doing what he did, and he does it anyway, right? So he writes a novel. Even though, you know, as a kid, even though it isn't clear to me that there's anybody in his life, direct life, that's ever written a novel before, somebody gives him a $2,000 check to publish it, and he's broke. He's got like $10 in his pocket, $10 to his name, and he says, you know what, no, I'm not going to take that because the changes you're suggesting, I'm not with it. And the spirit just isn't right. Right? I mean, the kid who dies accidentally at Lincoln University, and he he immediately organizes this fight against Lincoln to make it do right. Right? It's that type of – so, yeah, I mean, there's this energy and this spirit there that causes him to, instead of just reacting and saying what he's against, to take that next step, to say what he's for, and then the step after that, which is to actually engage. Right?
Let's play this cut. I'm going to jump on this. This is from You Could Be My Brother.
You could be my brother.
That last line, Ethelbert.
Man.
Well, you know, I was saying when you know we started your show about the whole thing of masculinity and men, and you know, I think that's a theme that runs through his work, and I think that's a theme that's also part of his sort of downfall in terms of what you see happening to so many of our members of our community in terms of when the drug epidemic hits, and how it claims many people in so many lives, politicians. You know, football players, athletes, entertainers. I can go down the list of African American writers who fought cocaine. You know, I can go down the list when that came in, and I think that you know, to still have a love for your community, to still have a love for your brother, your sister. Those are things in which, once again, going back to the blues, the resiliency. You have to dig deep. You know, to bring that. I go back to like 2 years ago when I saw Gil. You know, I went over the Blues Alley with the poet Sandra Beasley, and you know, he finished the set. You know, I got up and I said, "Hey, Gil, how you doing?" He immediately recognized me and he said, "Come on upstairs." And I went upstairs in a little room up there in Blues Alley. You know, where the guy said, "I'm gonna keep an eye on Gil because if I let him out of here, he may not do the second show." You know, and what happened? He was a shell of who he had been before. You know, but I look at the journey that a person takes in his life, and even if we say, okay, someone didn't survive this or they succumbed to that, there's still a message there, and it's still important for us as a community to love these individuals with their success and with their failures, okay? So I can teach Gil Scott-Heron the same way I can teach Marion Barry.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I can still teach it. I still maintain that look at the last election. Barry got like 72% of the vote. Yeah. I mean, no one understands politics the way Marion Barry, you know. No one, if you want to understand blues and music and stuff and you're like into hip-hop, yeah, get Gil Scott-Heron's life, complete life, you see. And that's why going back, don't reduce somebody down to one poem, okay? Don't reduce somebody down to one poem. Look at the full realm of their life, the full shadow that they cast, okay? And then you're able to take that part of your tradition and move it further, okay? But you know our community, you know, Gil, I mean, when the judge sends Gil back to Rikers Island, the guy knew Gil's music. the judge knew the music, man. It's like,
wow.
Man, the judge was like, you know, so sad, like, you know, what can I do? You know? And that's what addiction does.
Now I appreciate all the folks been on the show this hour. It's been great. Ethelbert Miller, it's always a real honor and a pleasure to have you with us. And it's this Thursday night at 7 o'clock. You'll be introducing Katrina Van Der Heuvel, editor of The Nation magazine and Busboys and Poets, 14th and V, right?
I think it's 5th and K.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Oh, it's the other
and
one. 5th
and K. Right. 5th and K.
Yeah.
Even easier to get to on some levels. Depends where you're coming from. So, Ethelbert, thank you, brother, for being with us today.
Okay, thank you. And I love being with my brothers. Thank you.
Oh, man. Ethelbert's my man.
All right. Many blessings.
Lester Spence, Darius, one more great to have you all in the studio.
Thanks
you all
for
so
having
much
me.
For being part of this today. And I'm going to raise money for WEAA. On the out of here, I have to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. It's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and you get money back. www.mecu.com. We'll be right back to talk about your public radio station.